some people have different feelings about it. Why it's not so good? Because it's a very holy book. Generally, we don't.
But it's comments on the same book.
It's comments by by who? Huh? Yeah. He was reading what? Oh, there we go. It's such a fallen soul. See, I need to do it. This is my excuse. But it may not be good. One time I had a dream, years and years ago, before I was writing in the books, that Prabhupada told me not to change anything in any book like that. That's a little different. But, and also one time in Bombay, I saw there's a copy in Prabhupada's quarters. There's a copy of Prabhupada's Gita Press, Bhagavad Gita. And in it he's written in the sides. Yeah. Arjuna Choja.
In his case, he cut the sloka off and he
changed it.
He caught it because it cannot be true. It's not the last experience. But we are not cutting any words off. We are trying to understand in better ways.
But I'm just wondering if it's a respectful way to treat the book.
If you say you can do it, then I'm sure.
Right, I'm not saying that you can do it. Because then I'll get everyone's karma if it's not right.
These was
stickers are very expensive. I don't think so. Especially when you're giving class, it's either that or have my computer right here, and I'll be reading from the computer. Yeah.
Every word is important. So if I find some point which is important, I write it down.
It's a nicer standard, I think. But I cannot instruct in this way for the reasons I have explained. I don't know if there's any definitive way. And also, I wanted to mention now, it's getting close to the end of our course, that Danadhar Swami is writing a very, very, very nice book. I wouldn't call it a commentary on the Nectar Devotion, but it's sort of explaining some of the points very, very, very nicely that are hard to understand and making it very, very clear and consistent, filling in the parts that one needs a teacher to explain. And he's kindly let me use his notes for this, so I've been using them, especially in the last chapters and somewhat in the beginning as well. So if there is any good coming out of this course, it is by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, Srila Rupa Goswami, and Danadhar Swami, and other Vaishnavas. Now we will speak further on the character of one in ecstatic love, which is Bhava Bhakti. Now, there are 9 different characteristics of one who is on the platform of Bhava Bhakti. Of course, it has been already explained by Rupa Goswami's definition of someone in Bhava Bhakti as Sudha Sattva Vasesatma, that one's heart is filled with pure goodness or the internal energy of the Lord. And prema suryangsa samyavak, and that means again that this bhava is like a part of prema. It is the ankur, premankur, or it is the sprout of prem that will eventually blossom into the tree of prem, which will give its fruit of love of God. Or it's compared to suryangsa, like a sunray, kana, sunray. And then the characteristics that are mentioned here by Rupa Goswami is ruchi bir chitta mazrina, that one develops all kinds of tastes, and his citta, or his consciousness, his heart, becomes very, very, very soft, mazrin. Very, 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 very soft. These are the characteristics, the internal characteristics, basically, of one who has attained the stage of bhava. But it sometimes happens that someone who is on the who is an impersonalist can also have a very, very, very soft heart. And also, since these qualities are very, very internalized, therefore Rupa Goswami, to stop us from being cheated in any way, from mistaking someone on the platform of bhava with someone who is not actually on the platform of bhava, he's giving these nine qualities that are more externally observable and externally exhibited. First, he is always anxious to utilize his time in devotional service of the Lord. He is not sitting and just meditating on the formless. He is actually serving the Lord. To become Brahman is one thing, and to act like Brahman is another. The person on the Brahman platform, he serves the Parabrahman, that is Krishna, 24 hours a day. He does not like to be idle. He wants service always, 24 hours a day, without deviation. Two, he is always reserved and perseverant. That is called chanti. He is very, very tolerant, peaceful, chanti. He is always detached from all material attraction. He does not long for any material respect in return for his activities. He is always certain that Krishna will bestow his mercy upon him. He is always eager to serve the Lord faithfully. He is very much attached to the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. He is always eager to describe the transcendental qualities of the Lord. He is very pleased to live in a place where the Lord's pastimes are performed, Mathura Vrindavan or Dwarka. So we know that Mathura Vas is one of the characteristics of sadhana bhakti. So here it is one of the qualities of bhava bhakti as well. So we can imagine how much more eager the person in bhava bhakti is to always be residing in the land, the transcendental land of Vrindavan. And then we can imagine when Prabhupada was, he left Vrindavan. So imagine how great that sacrifice was. But then in another sense, he never left Vrindavan, because he was always in Vrindavan, and that was clear to anyone who had the mercy of his association. So Rupa Goswami is going to first describe these nine and give Shastric quotes for them. I don't have much to say on them. They're all very, very clear. That perseverance or chanti, forbearance, means indifference to external reactions. He's internally so fixed. His consciousness is permeated completely with Krishna's internal energy. So nothing external is actually a disturbance to him. One time, I think it was in 1968, very early, Prabhupada was on a radio program, and they asked him if he could do any miracles, because after all he was a Swami. And in the West, especially in those days, and it probably is the same nowadays, no one really has any idea of what a Swami is. And when one thinks of a Swami, what does one think of? There's one picture that comes to someone's mind. There is a wooden board with nails coming up, and the Swami has the ability of lying on that and not being disturbed. That is the Western calculation of what a Swami is. So they asked Prabhupada if he could do any miracles. And he said, I could be in a room full of naked women and I would not be disturbed. This is miraculous. This is the greatest of miracles, actually, in the material world, where the attraction between male and female is are the actual bars of the cage of the material world, but he is free. So the feminine form is not empowered by Maya for him, like Ramananda Roy, because such an exalted personage, he was actually dressing and teaching the young Devidasis and bathing the young Devidasis in his house in Jagannath Puri. And Pradyumna Misra heard about that, and he could not understand Ramananda Roy's exalted position. But for people who are on that platform, there is no connection practically with the material world. Practically, actually speaking, they are not in the material world, already on the platform of bhava. It is not sadhana or practice. Then there is detachment, which is virakti. There is a distaste or indifference to the material world. Pridelessness, manashunyat, asabandha. This one's interesting. Not that the others aren't. But the mood of such a devotee, and we can understand therefore the humility of such a devotee is so great on this platform. I must simply pray to you. In this connection, one prayer by Rupa Goswami is sufficient to exemplify this hopefulness. It's a combination of hopelessness and hopefulness. Hopelessness based on one's own potency, and hopefulness based on the causeless mercy of Krishna. He thinks, I have no love for Krishna, nor for the causes of developing love for Krishna. I don't have any ability for karma, jnana, or yoga. What to speak of the main or an attraction for the main angas of sadhana bhakti, hearing and chanting. I have no ability to do anything. I'm such a hopeless wretch. I don't have any attraction for the causes of developing love of Krishna, hearing and chanting. And the process of bhakti yoga, by which one of thinking of Krishna and fixing his lotus feet in the heart, is also lacking in me. As far as philosophical knowledge, jnana, or pious work, karma are concerned, I don't see any opportunity for me to execute such activities. But above all, I'm not even born in a nice family. So I can't even take advantage of the vanashrama system of becoming elevated. So therefore, I have so many disqualifications, but yet somehow or another, I am simply praying to you, Gopi Jana Balava, Krishna, maintainer and beloved of the gopis. I simply wish and hope that some way or another, I may be able to approach your lotus feet. And this hope is giving me pain, because I think myself quite incompetent to approach that transcendental goal of life. So on one hand, there is a feeling of utter hopelessness, and on the other hand, there is a desire. So the tension between the desire and the hopelessness is very, very, very powerful, because that brings great dependence on Krishna. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur or Jiva Goswami has explained the reason why I'm incompetent to approach the destination is because every desire I have is filled, permeated with desires for my own happiness and the material pleasures coming from that. So when I am hoping to be engaged in your service, even that hope, that desire is selfish. It is not for your pleasure, it is for my pleasure that I'm thinking like that. So therefore, when the root is rotten, how can the plant grow? So this is how someone in Bhava Bhakti feels. This is one of the characteristics of Bhava Bhakti. And then we can examine our own consciousness. Of course, every once in a while, when we hear that an exalted devotee prays like that, we say, oh, I am most fallen. No, Prabhu, I'm more fallen. No, I am most, most fallen. But I am most, 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 most fallen. No, no, I am most, 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 most fallen. Are you saying that I'm not the most fallen? I'm going to I'm going to hit you. So, you know, we can imitate humility, but to actually feel real humility and to feel actual complete dependence on Vaishnavas, Guru and Vaishnavas, Guru Gauranga, and the mercy of Radha, Krishna, Krishna, Balaram, Lalita, Vishaka, Gauranitai. This is very exalted consciousness. It is the vehicle by which one becomes even further advanced. Next, samudkanta, eagerness for achieving the desired results. Attachment to chanting the holy names of the Lord. That is, the Sanskrit is nama gana sada ruchi, for always chanting. And then eagerness to describe the Lord's transcendental qualities and attraction for living in a place where the Lord has his pastimes. A pure devotee of Lord Krishna resides in the district of Mathura or Vrindavan and visits all the places where Krishna's pastimes were performed. So you are so fortunate you are getting that chance, because you are here residing in Vrindavan and every week going out. Did anyone not go last week? Oh, I think we were cleaning last week, is that right? The week before, where did we go? Huh? Did anyone not go? Hari Baba. Sick. Why get sick at a time like this? This is a chance. Huh? Give us my
separation.
Okay. But you should visit. At these sacred places, Krishna displayed his childhood activities with the cowherd boys in Madhya Yasoda. The system of circumambulating all these places is still current amongst devotees of Lord Krishna, and those coming to Mathura and Vrindavan always feel transcendental pleasure. Actually, if someone goes to Vrindavan, he will immediately feel separation from Krishna, who performed such nice activities when he was present there. Very powerful statement. Sometimes devotees say that you have to be on the platform of ruchi to feel any taste or something like that, but that's not what Prabhupada is saying. This is good. These things are good. To feel these attractions and attachments. Otherwise, what do we have? Just, you cannot do this, and you cannot do this, and you cannot do this, and you cannot do that, and you're not allowed to feel like this, and you're not allowed to enjoy this, and you can't look at that. We'll just become either dried up like leaves, dried sticks, or prunes, or we will be forced to seek pleasure in the material world, because the very nature of the living entity is pleasure seeking. Its very nature is pleasure seeking. So we have to seek our pleasure in prasadam, seeing the beauty of the deities. Otherwise, that's what Rupa Goswami has said, that we need these things to transfer our attention to the material, from the material world to the spiritual world. Otherwise, we'll just want to, instead of wanting to go to Vrindavan, we'll want to go to Disneyland and worship Mouse, Mickey the Mouse. Well, that's crazy. Why not want to go to Vrindavan and see everything in Vrindavan and pray that one day, after maybe many, many lives, when we see Govardhan Hill, that Sri Govardhan will be merciful to us and bestow his mercy, and see the Yamuna, and see Radha Govinda, and see Nandagaon and Bhashana, that one day we'll be qualified to enter in. But even like that, that is separation. That is some feeling of separation. We want something we don't have. We're missing it. This is very good. Even though it may be sentimental, but if we don't have that, what do we have? Sentiments are nice. We shouldn't mistake that for exalted love of Krishna, because we should know that if we have exalted love of Krishna, we'll be feeling like the hope against hope, and complete humility, and complete feeling despondent. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I have no love of Krishna. If I had love of Krishna, I couldn't maintain this body and soul together, like Dasarath. When Lord Ram left, Dasarath died. out of separation. So we shouldn't think that we have something we don't have, but we should know if we, this is a good thing, that we like to chant Hare Krishna, that we like to read Bhagavatam, that we like to hear Bhagavad Gita, that we like to go to Nandagaon, visit Govardhan. This is a good thing. But we shouldn't think that we have attained something wonderful, but we should cultivate that good thing under the guidance of Guru and Gauranga. We should, there's no harm in that, but we should surrender and be under the guidance of Guru. Because otherwise, just you say if you distribute books and you like it, then what should you do? Stop distributing books?
Say if you instruct to do something.
That question's been answered. You have to surrender to Guru. Without surrender to Guru, there's nothing. We should cultivate the serving mood. But if we're serving and Krishna's reciprocating by giving us some pleasure, that's not bad. That's what it says in the beginning. It's in Nectar Devotion. I don't remember exactly where. But in the beginning, the pleasure comes from the service. Because why? Because devotional service is not material. You're in touch with the internal energy. It is not just intellectual and mental devotional service. It is happy. How can you preach? Prabhupada once wrote me that letter. He prayed that Krishna would give me sufficient bliss to be able to preach. How could you preach unless you're happy? Otherwise, the Krishna consciousness movement becomes the movement to perpetuate unhappiness. You know, you're miserable, but it's the right thing because the philosophy is right, so you have to preach to everyone else to also become miserable and join and be right but miserable. That's not... Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. And spiritual unhappiness is spiritual unhappiness. That's a different kind of happiness. We shouldn't, like, if we're chanting our rounds or the kirtan's really, really blissful, I'm enjoying, this is very bad, I'm a faker, I'm a pretender, this is very bad, I should be miserable when I chant. Especially when I read Srimad Bhagavatam. No, this is horrible, I'm so miserable. No, it's wonderful, I'm horrible. No. It's not just a product of our intelligence and our mind. We're dealing with Krishna and his energy. Ultimately, Baladev, Nityananda Prabhu, Srimati Radharani. So, this is good. Prabhupada's order. The system of circumambulating all these places is still current among devotees of Lord Krishna, and those coming to Mathura and Vrindavan always feel transcendental pleasure. Always feel transcendental pleasure. Actually, if someone goes to Vrindavan, he will immediately feel separation from Krishna. Now, the next section underneath that is about Ratyabhas. Now that more or less goes right to the end. Ratyabhas. Abhas means semblance. I don't know if there's actually an English word, semblance, but this is the word that it's usually translated as, abhas. We say namabhas. The abhas means semblance. It is something like the real thing, but it is not the real thing. So this is ratyabhas, the semblance, or what something like actual rati. Rati means bhava. There are different words that are used for bhava. One is, the most common one is rati. Rati and bhava are the same. So, such attraction for remembering Krishna's activities is known as attachment for Krishna. There are impersonalist philosophers and mystics, however, by a show of devotional service, want ultimately to merge into the existence of the Supreme Lord. They sometimes try to imitate a pure devotee's sentiment for visiting the holy place where Krishna had his pastimes, but they simply have a view for salvation, and so their activities cannot be considered attachment. Rati means attachment. So, if an impersonalist exhibits softness of heart, but he has no actual attachment for these things, he's not on the platform of Bhava. Now, I'm going... And then Prabhupada explains here. This attachment or rati or bhava, for a person who simply wants to have liberation, emerge into the impersonal Brahma Jyoti, this is on page 139, sort of three quarters of the way down, attachment to Krishna is not possible to acquire. This rati or bhava is sudholava. Krishna, this attachment is very confidentially kept by Krishna and is bestowed only upon pure devotees. Even ordinary devotees cannot have such pure attachment for Krishna. Therefore, how is it possible for success to be achieved by persons whose hearts are contaminated by the actions and reactions of fruitive activities and who are entangled by various types of mental speculation? Only one who practices keval bhakti. Kevala means unalloyed bhakti. That term we used, unalloyed devotional service. The Sanskrit for that is kevala, kevala bhakti, not kaivalya. Kaivalya means impersonalism, but kevala means pure. And the term unalloyed means just like when we have iron and we mix in so many alloys to make it steel and with its different properties. So there, when we say unalloyed steel, it means there are no other metals mixed in. Unalloyed, nothing is mixed in. So when we say unalloyed devotional service or unalloyed bhakti or kevala bhakti, it means bhakti with nothing else mixed in. And especially, what? Karma, gyan, adi. Karma, gyan, yoga, anything else, any other desires. Anavrita. So when someone is not practicing kevala bhakti or unalloyed pure devotional service or uttama bhakti, he cannot get this bhava. So then the question is, what happens if someone is found to be exhibiting the symptoms of bhava, even though he's an impersonalist or something like that? So now Rupa Goswami is going to describe these abhasas or the semblance. Two different types of semblances of bhakti, of rati or bhava. Now first, Prabhupada explains, there are many so-called devotees who artificially think of Krishna's pastimes known as Astakaliya Lila. That means the day is divided into eight different sections. And in each of these eight different sections, approximately 4 hours long, but some of them are more and some of them are less, there are different, Radha and Krishna perform different leelas. At midday they go to Radhakund, and in the middle of the night they do this, and in the morning they do this, and they milk the cows at this time and they eat at this time. So this is part of the so-called Siddha Pranali people. Will attempt to do things like this Astakaliya Smaran, Leela Smaran. Always remembering Krishna's Leela in the eight different parts of the day. Sometimes one may artificially imitate these, pretending that Krishna is talking with him or in the form of a boy or else one may pretend that Radharani and Krishna both have come to him and are talking with him. So they try to imagine themselves within Radha and Krishna Leela, actually taking part in that Leela. This is the pakka, complete definition of sahajiya. And when one's just based on one's desire or one's faith, one is thinking that he can take part in Radha Krishna Leela, meditating on it, thinking there is Krishna, closing one's eyes and imagining Krishna, Radha and Krishna, and then you walking over and taking Krishna's flute or something like that. This is sahajiya. One should never imagine and do this type of imagination meditation. This is sahajiya. Such characteristics are sometimes exhibited by the impersonalists, and they may captivate some innocent persons who have no knowledge in the science of devotional service. However, as soon as an experienced devotee sees all these caricatures, he can immediately evaluate such rascaldom. That's one word that Prabhupada has so mercifully put into the English language. Rascaldom. Rascaldom, I always think of it as like there's a kingdom, is where the king lives. So these type of concepts are where the rascals live, in their rascaldom. And such a if such a pretender is sometimes seen possessing imitative attachment to Krishna, that is called ratyabhas, imitative attachment. That will not be accepted as real attachment, real rati. It may be said, however, that such attachment gives the pretender hope that he may eventually rise into the actual platform of devotional service. Now, we're going to now explain the two different types of ratyabhas, or imitative attachment. They are called pratibimba and chaya. Pratibimba, what does pratibimba mean? You know?
Reflection.
Reflection. Just like if there is a... the sun is over there, and we put a mirror over here, and the sun's rays are shining in the mirror, and that is called pratibimba. There is a reflection of the real item. It is not the real item, but it's a reflection of it. You can say, oh, the sun is in the room. But it's just the abhas, the pratibimba abhas, the reflective semblance or imitative semblance of rati, pratibimba. And then there is chaya. What does chaya mean? Raise your hand if you know.
Shadow.
Shadow, yes. So there is the shadow that's like, yes, you can vaguely see the shadow of my hand over here. If you look, or you can see the shadow of your own hand. There's no need to see the shadow of my hand. So that is also like the real item, but it is not the real item. Now, I'm going to read what Dhanadhar Swami has written. These definitions are very nice. Reflective attachment. Which is reflective attachment? Pratibimba, right? And what is chaya attachment? And they are both ratyabhas or bhavabhas or imitative or semblance of rati. Reflective attachment, pratibimba, means that one's motivation for taking to devotional service is something other than Krishna's pleasure, such as fruit of gain or liberation. In this case, the practice of devotional activities is usually fairly intense. So one is very intensely practicing his devotional service, but his motive is corrupt. He's practicing his devotional service to gain something material or to merge. And he may be experiencing this pratibimba ratyabhas. He may get... shows exhibit symptoms as if bhava in this way. Sometimes it is found, this is a quote from Prabhupada, it is found that a person actually attached to material enjoyment or salvation has the good fortune to associate with pure devotees while they are engaged in chanting the holy name of the Lord. By the good grace of the Lord, one may also cooperate and join in the chanting. At that time, simply by the association of such pure devotees, the moonlike rays from their hearts, the pure devotees' hearts, reflect on him by the influence of the pure devotees. He may show some likeness of attachment of rati, some semblance or ratyabhas. So in the association of pure devotees, someone who has mayavad tendencies during the kirtan or some other time, sometimes you see this in India, that a really good kirtan is going on and some saffron fellow with Chipunja Tilak comes in and he begins to dance, jumping up and down with his long hair and things like that, and he's dancing in ecstasy, forgetting himself like that. This is Pratibimba, Ratyabhas. Means that he is feeling some ecstasy maybe, but it is not like real attachment. It is the reflection. He cannot get real Rati or real Bhava because his motive isn't to love Krishna, to serve Krishna. His motive is fruitive or impersonal. Clear? Next is Chaya. Shadow attachment, Chaya, occurs when one takes to the process of devotional service out of social convention or curiosity. In this case, the practice of devotional activities is not as intense as Pratibimba, because you're not desiring, you're not taking to devotional service desiring to merge with the Lord or anything, but you're just doing it sort of out of curiosity. So your motive isn't intense. It's more superficial. But it is not as corrupt as Pratibimba. The heart is simpler. So Prabhupada, this is the quote from page 140. Says, shadow attachment or para attachment can develop if one associates with a pure devotee or one visits holy places like Vrindavan. And if an ordinary person develops such attachment for Krishna and fortunately performs devotional activities in the association of pure devotees, he can also rise to the platform of pure devotional service. So very wonderful that this chaya attachment, both of them occur, just like if we use our example, the shadow occurs and the reflection in the mirror occurs due to the presence of another object, and that other object is the pure devotee. So they are catching the rays from the pure heart of the pure devotee, and they may feel some ecstasy. But when that pure devotee is no longer present, they cannot feel that. Because it is just semblance, it is imitative. But out of the two, which is better? We should always know that when the motive is corrupt, that it is always worse. We may not be doing properly, but if the motive, the sincerity is actually okay, then gradually, eventually, everything will work out. But if the motive is improper, and Rupa Goswami explained this right in the beginning, there were so many verses explaining how devotional service or love of Krishna is so superior to impersonalism. Why? Because if that motive is in the heart, then one cannot make advancement. One will always be, even though one may be doing the so-called right thing, practices of sadhana, but if that desire is in the heart, then no result can possibly come. And by constant, if one has chaya attachment, by constant association and service, it can be transformed into actual bhava. Now, Rupa Goswami next explains, and this is more or less the last point we're going to cover, is that one, if he associates with pure devotees, can make further advancement, and even by the association of pure devotees, even if he has chaya attachment, it can be elevated to real bhava. And that's what Prabhupada says. As attachment can be invoked by the association of pure devotees, this is at the top of page 141, it can also be extinguished by offenses committed at the lotus feet of pure devotees. To be more clear, by the association of pure devotees, attachment for Krishna can be aroused, but if one commits offenses at the lotus feet of the devotees, everything can be extinguished. And it is compared to the waning moon. Everything will be lost. So therefore, the point is that one should not commit offenses. That's the point. Otherwise, whatever we gain by the association of pure devotees will be lost. And then finally, at the bottom of page 141, if however it is seen that a person has developed a high standard of devotion without having undergone even the regulative principles, it is to be understood that his status of devotional service was achieved in a former life. For some reason or another, it had been temporarily stopped, most probably by an offense committed at the lotus feet of a devotee. Now, with a good second chance, it has again begun to develop. The conclusion is that steady progress in devotional service can be attained only in the association of pure devotees. If one can gradually advance his status in devotional service, this is understood to be due to the causeless mercy of Krishna himself. If a person is completely detached from material enjoyment and has developed pure ecstatic devotion, even if he sometimes accidentally is found not to living up to the standard of devotional service, one should not be envious of him. It is confirmed also in Bhagavad Gita that a devotee who has unflinching faith in and devotion to the Lord, even if sometimes found to be accidentally deviated from pure devotional characteristics, should be counted amongst the pure. Unflinching faith in devotional service in Lord Krishna and in the spiritual master makes one highly elevated in the activities of devotional service. If a person has completely engaged his mind, body, and activities in the service of the Supreme Godhead, this we are being told this to help make sure that we don't commit offenses, because that will ruin everything. But externally he is found to be engaged in some abominable activities. These abominable activities will surely be quickly vanquished by the influence of his staunch devotional service. The moon may have spots, but the spots on the moon do not stop it from giving out its cooling and effulgent rays. So a little fault in the midst of volumes of devotional service is not at all to be counted as a fault. Attachment for Krishna is transcendental bliss. Amid unlimited volumes of transcendental bliss, a spot of some material defect cannot act in any way. That is Bhava Bhakti. So when someone is on that platform, one has to be very careful when dealing with them. But that platform is very, very, very rare. But in general, we should be very, very respectful and careful in dealing with all the devotees. Not, oh, you're not on the platform of Baba, so therefore I can offend you. Or you've only been a devotee for so long, therefore I can be offensive and nasty or find all your faults. No, it's not the mood of a Vaishnava. Sometimes it's the service of a Vaishnava to find faults. The service of the spiritual master is to find faults. The service of the parent is to find faults. The service of a manager is to make things sure things go on, and sometimes he has to find fault. But if it's not our service, we should make sure we don't take it up, because we'll end up causing ourselves trouble. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how they all relate. I just explained it in a way that will make it simpler. Pratibimba is reflective.
Yeah, because Prabhupada using shadow attachment and pala attachment.
Yeah.
We speak about shadow attachment and reflection.
But then later on Prabhupada says that para attachment is, in parentheses it says transcendental, which is usually the meaning of para, transcendental. So I've taken to explain it in a...
Because Prabhupada in his second paragraph on 140, that this imitative attachment can be divided into two categories, this shadow attachment and para attachment.
Yeah. But usually the translation anyway, I'm not sure exactly.
Yeah. Because it seems to me that reflection is have more value than shadow, because it's at least light.
depends what you want to do. If you're looking for cooling shade, which would you prefer? The reflection of the sun or the shadow of a tree? So we want heat, or we want the material world is compared to a blazing forest fire. What to do? Yeah, it's more intense. That we can say, and that's what we also said. That reflective pratibimba is more intense. But the motive is corrupt. So therefore it's considered worse. Because the motive, the root is rotten. And the other one isn't pure, but it's simpler. There is no insincerity in it, no wanting anything else. It's not pure, it's not the right reason, but it's not the right reason, but it's the reasons aren't corrupt. Just doing it simply.
In a radio interview probably 68, you said that the female form is not empowered by Maya.
I said that, that's not what Prabhupada said.
Right. That the female form is not empowered.
It is empowered by Maya. Well, that's because we'll use the example that he uses about Bhava Bhakti, is the clouds. The clouds are like Maya. So when you're above the clouds, there is no Maya anymore.
But is it pure devotee's transcendental vision due to the absence of Maya, or that he can see beyond the clouds? He can see through the clouds?
I'm just trying to work out the example. Maya is not there. Maya paite abhimukhe valajamana. Maya is shy to come in front of, ashamed to come in front of a pure devotee. Because Krishna is there. The example the Prabhupada uses is that when you're facing the sun, the shadow, there's another shadow example, is at your back. You cannot see the shadow. The shadow is not there for you. But when you face away from the sun, then you see the shadow. So when we're faced towards Krishna, there is no Maya. And when we face away from Krishna, Maya is there.
If the materialist and the pure devotee look the same object, they would have different visions. It is dependent on the personal vision.
Stavamam jagamam deki na deki taramuti. Istadeva Sputi. So you just see Krishna everywhere. Because everything has a connection with Krishna. When Maya is not, and Maya means is not, Maya separates us from Krishna in consciousness, but not in fact, because we can't be separated from Krishna. So when Maya isn't there, things are naturally seen in their perspective, in their Krishna conscious perspective. I don't know if that answers your question. When Maya doesn't infect the consciousness, just like here, then one sees things as they are.
If a devotee's feelings are not affected by these advanced motives, And he's still practicing
but he's not practicing pure devotional service, because pure devotional service is jnana, karma, anavrita.
Yeah. Yeah, my question is, then he feels some devotional ecstasy, how do you turn those, like the ones
you explained? When someone on a lower level, not on the bhava level, is feeling happiness in Krishna, and doing his service, that's... What is it? It's Krishna's mercy? And that happiness is impetus, because it will make his material desires seem very pale, and they seem useless, so we want to push them from our heart. and take shelter of Krishna more. So that will work very favorably for a devotee. But this is talking about something a little different. Rati Abhas. So we can know the difference between the Abhas of Rati, Bhava, and the real thing. That's why this is being explained here.
So how to distinguish between you feel happiness and you want to enjoy Krishna?
No, we should want to serve Krishna. And that will bring us the most happiness. So when we're young devotees, we're at the center. Serving Krishna brings me happiness, so I'll serve Krishna. And then if we become mature, it's just thinking about Krishna. And the happiness isn't desired, but it comes automatically. Like when the devotee is praying, Janmani, Janmani, Svare, Bhavatad Bhakti, Ahayatiki, I don't want wealth, this, that, birth after birth, I want to serve you. But he won't take birth after birth. But that comes automatically. It's not his desire, but it comes automatically as a byproduct of service to Krishna. So happiness comes automatically by service to Krishna. But if happiness becomes the center of our decision making, not the service to Krishna, then we will get into trouble. So therefore it begins with surrender. And if we're surrendered, then the service of Krishna is the center, and then the happiness will be simple. But if we think, oh, this service won't make me happy, and this service will make me happy, and if, you know, that becomes, never mind the need, never mind what Guru wants, never mind what Krishna wants, but what I want, then that's obviously a lower grade, and one has to be purified. And if Krishna is very kind, he'll take everything away and force us to surrender, painful as it is. Okay, so tomorrow, chapter 19, please read that. Who read chapter 18 thoroughly? Raise your hands. Today's? Cursorily or thoroughly?
Okay.
Especially then, all those people who read it cursorily should read about Prema Bhakti even more cursorily. They should read it just very, very superficially. For what? I don't have any for this. And I didn't think it was so required. But I don't have any. Okay, Jai, Srila Prabhupada.